This is AutoLine After Hours with John McElroy, episode 34 for Thursday, December 3rd, 2009, Peanuts in L.A. Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLineDetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern or 2400 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free. Try searching for AutoLine After Hours at the iTunes store. Live from L.A., it is AutoLine After Hours. Why from L.A.? Because it's the L.A. Auto Show. And we've got three great journalists joining us this evening, this afternoon, still
two
L.A.
journalists
time.
And me.
I was just going to say, where
yeah,
are they?
Yeah. Who came in? And joining us today, we've got Mark Vaughn from Auto Week. And what's your official title there besides from Auto Week?
Senior Editor West Coast. They give you a bigger title instead of money.
Yeah, it's right. Nice. Yeah, they pay you a whole lot more. The senior part they got right, you know.
Ooh, snap.
Yeah, right.
Ouch.
And also with us today is Carl Brower from Edmunds. And give us your exact title, too, because I don't know all these things. I just know you guys.
I think that something like Editor-in-Chief, I think.
Editor-in-Chief. That's got a nice ring to it.
Yeah. Don't let it fool you.
And also joining us, Mark Rechten from Automotive News. And what are you?
West Coast Editor.
West Coast Editor. Well, we're on the West Coast, so that's appropriate. So what did you guys think of the show so far?
Snore.
I mean, we're still here, so it's not officially over until we leave, even though all the press conferences are gone. What's the big thing here?
There's no news. I mean, there are cool cars. There are a couple of cool cars. There's the Peanut.
Peanut.
And we're going to have to explain that later. We'll get into that later.
Come on, man. Yeah. We all agreed we were going to do the Peanut
we
dance.
We did?
Okay.
When did we agree that?
Do it.
Okay, Peanut.
Peanut.
Okay, so Vaughn,
welcome to Honda, by the way.
What's that mean, Peanut, for those out of the loop here?
Personal neutron ultimate torpedo. What does it stand for?
New urban transportation.
Neo urban
transportation.
Neo, okay.
It's a little three-seat thing. Like it's very similar to the McLaren F1.
Except it doesn't rip.
Except
it doesn't
that it has three bucks. Seats nope. Like that. Right. But it's like the futuristic.
And it's made of plexiglass.
Oh, yeah, it's a death trap.
It looks
but
like
it's a cool-looking
and it looks
trap.
Like a bike helmet. That's right. That's the main...
Yeah, designed out here in California,
Pasadena.
Yeah, by Dave Merrick. Yeah.
Dave Merrick, cool designer.
God bless him. He lost the ponytail.
He lost a lot of weight, too.
For the ponytail.
Yeah, but it's you know, in the future, this was 15 years out, right?
Yes.
Design a car for 15 years out, and apparently cars are going to be very small, and you're not going to want to talk to anybody. So they got this seat
there's no
here
back
in the middle
seat.
And two in the back. No, there are two back seats.
Oh.
And so you can drive around like that, you know, hey, shut up, and kind of like that, and it's an image of the future. But it's very small. I talked to the PR guy, and he refused to classify it as either a K car, like the little things in Japan.
K-E-I.
K-E-I, very good. Or a B-class car. He said, no. No, I will not classify. So we don't know if it fits into any classification. It obviously doesn't meet any government standard because it's just a death
But it looks
trap.
Cool.
And it flies.
Looks very cool.
I mean, it
does not fly.
I like it.
Looks
you don't
okay.
Like it, Carl.
It looks okay.
No, what? You got to like the rear brake intake that's right off a Renault 5.
R5, come on.
Know your history.
Not working for me.
I can't see it rallying, though.
What about the up light, which was right next door, so to speak, in car size?
The fifth one of the ups. The cool up. What was the up that looked like the microbus? That was in L.A. in 2007. It was like the bus up, blue up something. That was really cool.
It blew up.
And it had the rear mounted three-cylinder, and it was doomed. They were never going to make it. They were just torturing
right.
us.
But I like this up light that they've got.
Actually,
I
like that one. It looked pretty nice.
It has potential for polo.
Mm-hmm. Lupo, right?
Lupo, polo.
It's Lupo size.
Yeah.
But it doesn't look funky, weird. So, I mean, it looks kind of futuristic, bullet-like kind of thing.
They wouldn't have to change it too much to still have it look like a good real car. You know, it doesn't look so far out that you would never see it on the street. It would look very cool on the street, almost the way it is.
And what's the number they're quoting? Like 67 miles to the gallon with the
70
miles to the gallon
with the diesel electric, which would never be priced for a car of that class.
And it's all theoretical, of course, because they pushed it up onto the stand. And
the car that gets 70 miles to the gallon's got to be pushed up on the stand.
A theoretical mileage.
All right, theoretical. It's air miles.
So are there any trends that, I mean, okay, we just talked about two small cars, you know, A-class, A-size cars, I guess, really. But are there trends that you see? Everyone's still talking green. And I know the L.A. show says, oh, we're the green show. But every auto show I've gone to in the world says, we're the green show. So, but green didn't seem to be pushed as heavily at this show as maybe a year or two ago.
Well, there's not as much to show. L.A. is always pretty much reined in all the sort of B-tier cars. They never get the big showstopper. A couple years, they get some big grand unveiling. When Toyota launched Scion, that was a huge win for them. But being scheduled so close to Detroit, all the big showstoppers are going to be there. And L.A. is sort of a second-tier player in that regard. Yeah, there's some important cars here. I mean, you look at the Hyundai Sonata, that's an impressive car.
Hey, to me, Hyundai stole the show. I mean, if you can say somebody stole the show, Hyundai stole the show with the new Sonata and with the new Tucson, too. In fact, I'm calling it the uh-oh company, because if I were Toyota or Honda, I'd look at those cars and go, uh-oh. Sonata's going right after the Camry. In fact, I think it out-Camrys the Camry.
The four-cylinder LE, the volume model.
All you can get is a four-cylinder.
Right. That was what they were doing, though. They said, okay, we're going to build this Sonata just to take the bite right out of Toyota's main volume vehicle, because Toyota loves to show all the V6s and all the leather seats, but that's not what they sell. Yeah, it's 80%. I'm sure
it's 90%.
Wrong.
John Krafcek said after the unveiling of the Tucson that it's 90% in the midsize segment is four-cylinder. So why bother to make a V6? You know, because if you make the V6, then you have to add all that extra... I can't say crap on the air, can I?
You just said it, man.
Oh, man.
All that extra stuff in order to accommodate the V6, the extra weight and everything. So if you design the car from the beginning for a four-cylinder, then you save weight, you save space, you get a bigger cabin, you get blah, 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 yada, yada,
yada. They're talking about they save like 170 pounds versus the old model. I mean, it's a huge amount of weight.
And the Tucson was 61 pounds, too. So.
Yeah.
And the Tucson is the one where I think Honda should go, uh-oh, because that's going right after the throat of the CR-V. And it's got the styling.
They both look good, or at least they look like they're supposed to for that market
system. Well, they look more upscale. I mean, you know, the Escape's in there, too, but the Escape looks pretty boring and boxy next to those two things.
It's been around a while.
Yeah. Right.
And Hyundai's taken their styling and moved it from being sort of juvenile and adolescent to looking like something that people would aspire to own, as opposed to have to make excuses for owning.
Yep. Well, the Sonata, to me, was designed for the American market. To me, it just looks great. And I love how they take that chrome strip on the belt line and run it right into the hood line, too.
It's like a CLS, doesn't it?
It's very...
They would love it. Krafcek paid me $4 to say that.
Hey, speaking of Krafcek...
You took it happily, didn't you?
GM's supposedly looking out for a new CEO right now. They say, we need fresh young blood. I'm saying, go after Krafcek, General Motors.
He was asked that after presentation, and he didn't even refuse to... He didn't even get to the level of refusing to answer it. He just, like, deferred with humor.
Right.
So, it's an undenial denial.
That's right.
The kiss of death
it's
is
him.
To say, yeah, I'd like a job like that. Carl, who do you think GM should go for in trying to replace not just Fritz Henderson, but now their CEO, Ed Whitaker?
Right. Well, I mean, is Mullally totally buried in Ford now? Could he?
Oh, Mullally's not going to go to GM. I mean,
but that's
on.
What they need. If not Mullally, and I don't think Mullally's going anywhere, but someone like him, they need Mullally Part 2. They need an outsider who can come in and essentially get the job done without all the baggage that that company is still suffering from, or at least that's what the Ford
is. Is that
thinks.
What Whitaker is?
What, baggage or a fresh young
blood?
No,
boy? just like
he's
you described.
Is
well,
he
he's an outsider.
Too? A lot of people are making that assumption that the reason that they're putting this long time frame on finding the next guy is that we'll just kind of warm up and get used to the idea that Whitaker really runs the show.
And they could say, we tried really hard to find a replacement, but really, Ed's the guy.
Yeah.
Isn't Whitaker's ultimate goal world domination?
You're not supposed
you
to
had
talk
dinner
about
with him,
it,
didn't you?
But to me, that was the news of the show. I mean, it sort of dominated everything of what was going on here. Not from the car standpoint, but, you know, everywhere I go, everybody's been talking about, what do you think about Fritz and who's going to replace him? And
was
what
that
about
by design, do you think? Did GM want to, like, decide, you know what, let's make the L.A. show all about General Motors? Was that
No, because their whole mantra now is to be not about General Motors. It's about the brands.
Well, they failed on that one, then. It was all about General Motors for most of the show because of that Fritz situation.
Well, here's the thing. We're all in the industry. This is all inside baseball. This is fascinating stuff to us. But if you go down this, you know, go outside and avoid the
homeless
people.
Go out on the sidewalk, right.
If you talk to the people walking into the Kings game tonight and you say, who's Ed Whitaker? Who's Fritz Henderson? He plays point guard for San Antonio. They don't know, and they don't care.
They don't care.
To them, it's deck chairs.
Why should they care? There is no reason.
And depending on your perspective of how bad off GM is, it's either deck chairs on the QE2 or deck chairs on the Titanic. So we can spool around on this for a while, but in the end, it's going to take much more than replacing the CEO. It's a whole corporate culture that's been ingrained for 50 years.
I don't know.
Years.
Look what Mullally did at Ford. They bring one guy in. Remember, he didn't blow out a bunch of people and bring team.
Well, not his team, but he blew out a bunch of people.
Who? They were blown out before.
Well, layers and layers. I mean, that's the amazing thing, is you read about these thousands of people who get laid off on the white-collar level, and somehow the company doesn't fall apart. Now, maybe they're asking people to do an insane amount of work and work,
they are.
And work 80-hour weeks to be grateful that they're still employed at the Blue Oval. But if the layoffs were really that horrible for the company, the company would have fallen apart by now, but instead we're seeing profit.
Right.
Yeah, but I would argue that if GM wants to get past, you know, bankruptcies and on to rebuilding the company, which is what they want to do, they do need to get past this turbulence. I don't know how many more of these are lurking out there, you know. I mean, this was obviously probably as big as it gets. The head guy gets axed. But what killed Ford was that where it got to the point where the average consumer did care, they didn't know about all these people switching every 6 to 18 months leading Ford back in the early 2000s. They did know that after 5 years, all the cars were the same cars and there wasn't any new product in the pipeline. And that's why, because there was no one guy leading the company. There were, you know, four guys over like 6 years trying to lead the company. And that's where GM is going to head if they don't get one guy to lead the company. Now, maybe this will be the first and last of this kind of high level, well, second and last after both Wagner and Henderson. But maybe now they're done and they'll move forward and they'll have a solid footing. But that's what worries me. When I see this, I think, okay, we cannot spend the next 4 years trying to figure out who's going to run this company. Ford already did that and it almost took them out. That was the single most destructive thing to Ford in the last 10 years.
Yeah, no, I agree. But, you know, when everybody talks about, oh, General Motors needs culture change, and they bring in these cultural change agents, and they do all these studies. And, you know, when I look at what Mullally did, he went in and said, hey, we got to clean out all this crap. We got to establish very simple, straightforward goals. We got to make everybody understand how they fit into those goals, and voila, culture changes. Mm-hmm. You don't do all this studying and bring in experts and consultants. Just tell people what they got to do and get them on with it. Mm-hmm.
Look at what Carlos Ghosn. I think they need somebody like Carlos Ghosn.
they already tried.
Carlos tried to get the company,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
No. I mean somebody like who knows about the industry and yet doesn't owe anybody anything. So he went over to Japan and he cleaned house. He got rid of all that. What's the Japanese word for, you know, paying
cleaning house?
Off? It's called kamikaze.
Muda?
I don't know.
It's waste.
Anyway, that's
Muda.
A good word.
Muda. No Muda.
And he came in, he was able to come in because nobody knew him. He didn't know anybody. He was able to do things that a guy who had been there forever wouldn't be able to do. So if you get a guy from inside GM or even from inside Detroit, you're not going to be able to do it. Whereas if you bring somebody who's outside, I'm not saying John Krafcik. I'm just saying, you know, you could. That's $8.
But you raised Carlos Ghosn. Should GM go after Carlos Ghosn?
I think Carlos Ghosn, you know, you sort of peak and then you're done. You know?
But maybe he's ready for his... Redemption. The redemption of Carlos Ghosn. That sounds like a...
The redemption
sounds like a
of
movie.
Carlos Ghosn.
Yeah.
Redemption. He's listening right now in the streets of Paris in the back seat of an Altima on the way to work.
Zut alors, I will kill him.
Or he was, that is a fantastic idea. I will do that.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's fantastic. I will run General Motors.
It will work because it is going to be fantastic.
Nissan is never calling us again.
Right. No, they're not. But they're not at the show.
I was going to say, they're not here.
Come on. What can they do? You
know? SoCal's got to be an important part of Nissan's market, right? Why are they not at the show?
California represents a third of all exotic cars sold in the U.S.
And there's no exotic car guys
right,
here.
Ferrari, Maserati, Lamborghini, they didn't show.
Bentley's not here either.
It's the largest, the state of California is the largest single state of any in the U.S. in terms of vehicle sales. And Nissan used to be located just down the Harbor Freeway, and yet they're not here. And they still did an unveiling. They unveiled the new M on top of the hotel.
The Infiniti. Infiniti M and the new G.
Right.
And so, you know, they get all the journalists here, but they don't go to the expense of exhibiting on the floor. I think that's a big mistake.
A lot more
on
companies are doing that, though. That's becoming kind of common, where these companies are deciding, well, we have them in town for the show. That doesn't mean we have to pay the show rates for the booth.
I know,
time.
But ultimately, you run that out, the show collapses. Then what are they going to do? Say, hey, why doesn't everybody go to XYZ City and we'll have a bunch of parties around town?
Actually, I addressed this very topic at autonews.com. If you go online tomorrow, you can see me discussing this.
At AutoWeek.com, so it's also available there with a nicer banner.
Go ahead, say Edmunds.com.
I was just
going to
say, it doesn't matter. We've got better SEO, so just type in the internet and Google, you'll land on our page.
SEO surfing excellently, outrageously, I think that stands for.
That's why your SEO isn't very good.
Stands for return
Victor
on investment.
Call him. This is the guy
what
you want
was
to call.
The question?
I don't know.
Why isn't Nissan here?
It's okay.
We don't know.
Yeah. It's okay for them. Okay.
Well, they dropped out of Detroit, too.
Right.
And I don't think they're coming back.
Like,
well,
they made a blanket
the problem
statement.
Is turnstile count. And if Detroit doesn't really pull in a lot of people off the streets who want to look at Nissans anyway, okay, I can see that.
Right.
But this show, no matter what they do, they don't have to have Ferraris or Lamborghinis. A million people still come through here and look at cars. And for Nissan to avoid that potential sales opportunity because they don't want to have an expensive press conference is, I think, a strategic error. They don't have to have a press conference on site. They can have a booth. They can have, you know, they can have it as opulent as Minis or Mazdas
or
Jaguars.
And not only that, what we talked about, they have the brand new M, the brand new or redesign of the G. Those are important cars. They should be on the floor of the show here.
They should be. But even more important is Ferrari, Maserati, Lamborghini.
And Bentley.
And Bentley.
I looked on the program. I couldn't find them there.
This is where the mutton heads in Beverly Hills come because they don't know anything about cars. They just know that they want to get a car so they can pick up 22-year-old girls. And they don't. This is where they find out about
girls.
Them. Or,
you can say that.
22-year-olds.
Yeah. 22-year-old marsupials.
Right. What is a marsupial, anyway?
It has a tail.
So, but it's vitally important for those companies to be here. And they're not. It's silly. You know, they're saving I don't know how many lira by not showing up, but they really should be here.
Well,
that Center Hall was Allard. I mean, there was Allard in there.
That's right.
They obviously think that those customers are going to know about the cars and find out about them without utilizing the show, rightly or wrongly. I mean, maybe they think people don't want to come down and make their way through, you know, the homeless outside, the people who buy those cars.
I don't think about it. They're saying, those shows are expensive, so we're not going to spend that money. Ergo, people will not see our cars. So they will not buy them, which means we're going to have to cut costs even more.
Well, they may rationalize it by saying the people who are going to buy Ferraris are going to buy them anyway, and if we put a brand new Italia on the show floor, we're going to get all these lunkheads from the valley who, you know, the nearest they're ever going to get to one is if the valet parking guy runs over their foot. And meanwhile, they hop in the car and they mess up all the switch gear and steal the shift knobs and, you know, they ruin the car, basically. And then Ferrari's got to find someone besides Nicolas Cage to buy it, although Nicolas Cage isn't buying Ferraris right now either. So that kind of reduces the market by a lot here in L.A.
But actually, nobody messes with the switches because they have those cars walled off in special displays. And unless you look like somebody, you're not allowed through the gate.
They won't even let the somebodies in there. Trust me, I've tried.
You know that firsthand.
They told you you were somebody.
Yeah, Mr. Somebody, you're not allowed in the car.
So what else? What else on the floor is worth talking about here?
Porsche.
The Boxster Speedster.
Yeah.
Tell us, Carl, about the Boxster Speedster.
Well, the Boxster Speedster is the newest Boxster special limited edition introduced. It's got a 13-pound roof, and it's very fast and cool looking. That's my professional opinion of the car.
Thank you, Carl.
No, I thought what I found interesting about that car was that it was the only performance-oriented car introduced at the show, and it just, you know, it's a real statement of the times we live in that instead of having, you know, car companies battling over who's got the highest horsepower rating and the fastest 0-60 time, you've got them battling over, MPG ratings that they can, you know, that they can kind of cheat out of the EPA depending on how you measure electricity and gas usage and all, and the Boxster sits off in its own area in the Porsche thing with hardly anyone even. Oh, yeah, there's also a performance car here, I think.
Well, the performance car that they didn't show, but which will be, is going to be the Ford Fiesta when they put in the EcoBoost. Now, Ford, don't cheap out on this, okay? Listen to us. Yeah. Don't put in a 1.4 EcoBoost and get the same horsepower as the regular 1.6, so you can say, oh, it gets 48 miles per gallon instead of 40. Put in the 1.6 that gets 130 horsepower. If you put that in the Fiesta, you can call it the Fiesta RS, and all us crazy street kids will buy it. We promise.
And make a summer tire option for you guys out here in SoCal where you don't need all-weather radials and you can have the handling of the Fiesta like they got in Europe.
And as, oh good, it's aimed at me already.
Yeah.
You want to get rid of those 5 doors and do a 3-door. You want a 3-door hatch. The 5-door, you just, there are doors all over the place. It's the door-mobile. And what you need to do is a 3-door. Any hot hatch, if you grew up reading Sport Compact Car, well, actually, I didn't grow up. I almost became the editor when it was founded.
You're never going to grow up.
But if you do a 3-door hatch, it looks much, much cooler. The 5 doors, it looks like some kind of European rental car. And that 4-door is...
The 4-door is bad.
Well, but the 4-door is only for the American market, too.
We're the only ones interested in buying ugly versions of cool European cars.
Well, we're not ready to buy hatchbacks yet in mass quantities.
While we're talking about 3-door hatchbacks, Audi, please bring the 3-door A3. I can say that as an Audi owner. I have the 5-door A3. They just wouldn't bring the 3-door, otherwise I would have gotten that. And while we're at it, congratulations to Audi for Green Car of the Year for the TDI version of the A3. Nicely done.
Golf clap. Although even more impressive to me is Hyundai's bragging rights of having the highest fuel economy of any car company now. I thought that was quite a statement.
Yeah.
They're not a full-line manufacturer. You know, they don't make these gigantic Econoline vans or full-size pickups or the like. But if I'm Honda, I'm going, wait a minute.
Yeah.
I thought we were the top guys here. Hyundai beat us, and that's why I'm calling them the uh-oh company.
They're going to rule the world. That's all there is to it. I mean, the last 2 years of trends on everything is every company should be afraid, be frightened of Hyundai and Kia, right?
Well, but they only have 4% of the overall market.
What did they have three years ago?
Kraftchik told me that Hyundai Kia surpassed Ford Motor Company this year in volume. I got to go look up those numbers.
In what, though? He might be saying, like, in mid-size marsupial.
No. He's talking total global production.
Global production.
Oh, well, Hyundai Kia.
They're building all those A to Zs or ATOS or how you pronounce it.
ATOS.
Still, that's a statement to say Hyundai Kia is bigger than Ford.
Cars.
Still.
Well, Hyundai and Kia together, they make all kinds. But I think we lose track. When we're looking at the rise, it was 34% year-on-year for Hyundai, right?
I don't know. I haven't seen the
improvement in sale. And I think it's only 4% of the total market. So, yeah, those are different ways to look at
numbers. And other people have told me, go look how much is retail versus fleet. They say there's a half the percentage increase is fleet.
But they're also reducing their incentive pricing. They're getting closer to MSRP pricing. They're not having to basically push the cars out the door like a lot of the other brands are. So when you have an increase in sales without having to give the cars away or push them out the door, it's a pretty powerful combination. I'd be very worried if I were some of the competitors.
They still got that 8-million-year warranty. Right?
Right?
They got 5 years of roadside assistance. Can you believe that? So in the year 2014, you can call up on the Harbor Freeway out there and, Kraftchik will come into the pair of jumper cables. Get your car going in. Oh, no, he'll be GM.
Or give you your money back.
Right.
But he'll keep the same cell phone. I'm not Hyundai anymore.
Leave me alone.
So GM, speaking of GM, they have the Regal here and the Cadillac CTS Coupe.
Very sharp.
Both cars
very
look
angular.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both I hear the cars. Regal is on the Opel Insignia platform. Is that true?
You heard that? Really?
That's crazy talk. Crazy talk.
It's a European car of the year. Is what I
heard. Well, there you go. I drove an Insignia from Munich to Geneva, and it's fast, but it's also heavy. And as far as dynamic feel of the car, especially if Buick decides to float it out on the suspension, or float it and bloat it, this could be a really slow, ponderous vehicle. So I really hope the
GM... That's what American buyers want. Slow, ponderous vehicles.
Slow, ponderous Buick. Imagine.
With drab design.
GM engineers, hope you did your homework.
But it can't be that bad if it got Car of the Year in Europe.
The European version. That's the...
And it was journalists who named it that. Remember, you can't trust anything we say. We don't know what we're talking about.
We don't.
They gave us a pen, and all of a sudden we think we're smart.
He's telling more of the secrets again.
Zutalos. So what other news? What other people? What other cars? Or have we already drained everything that's happened at the LA show?
That's the thing. That's it. You know, that's the thing is the show, a lot of people are happy because the show didn't feel as you know, down and dour as it did last year. Of course, I don't think it was possible to feel as down and dour as it did last year. So there's this sense that we've hit bottom and we actually have a sense of where it is and we're hopefully climbing out. And that's good. And everything from, you know, the sales trends to the energy around the show kind of supports that. But there still wasn't a lot of activity here. I mean, as we've already said, a lot of manufacturers didn't show up at all. A lot of manufacturers showed up and did nothing. So it was still a pretty, you know, low
compare
level
this throw. To Frankfurt or Geneva. Frankfurt was just, it was going. I mean, when we sat down and decided, you know, what's best to show, what's most significant, what's, you know, most improved or whatever, we had long lists in every category of significant new cars, exciting, significant new cars. Here, there's nothing. We're
well,
not picking
things.
Best of show.
Yeah.
But if we did, it would be the peanut.
Come on.
Well, did you guys get in the hybrid version of the 7 Series, BMW 7?
Yep.
I drove that today.
Well, we're in BMW's booth, and unfortunately, if it weren't for these microphones, we could go all climb in it, but we're chained here, so.
But, Mark, I hear that John was in it today.
Yeah.
Tell us about it.
Oh, I'll tell you all about it, boys. It's a mild hybrid that matches the fuel economy of the Lexus LS600H Strong Hybrid. And better acceleration to boot, and lower cost to boot. So
is that
now you
mild,
can't...
strong stuff? They just made that up, or does that mean anything?
Well, you know, there's micro, there's mild, there's strong, there's super
full.
Strong.
I thought it was full.
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 Okay. Full.
It's full of itself.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have a 30% charge. You know.
Well, it's 100,
price.
It's $103,000, but that's $3,000 cheaper than the Lexus.
But nobody's, you know, buying that.
The problem with hybrids is at the end of the day, you still spend a lot of money for a very small mile per gallon gain, and it's so clear that you're doing it for your neighbors that also have overpriced cars and overpriced houses and have bigger carbon footprints than 10 of your best friends. And has nothing to do with any sort of actual earth friendliness. So I have very little patience for all these vehicles that cost too much for a small gain, if any, on whatever supposed earth friendliness they
have.
Well,
I'm not sure they're just doing it for, you know, the tree huggers. There's this thing called CAFE and another thing called CO2 legislation that's right on its heels.
Yeah, but don't they have to sell some of those things to count? They
yeah,
can't
is that
just
sales weighted?
Yeah.
I mean,
it is sales weighted. Yes,
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, so it doesn't do them any good to put, I mean, I guess it does because someone was going to buy those things, but, you know, $100,000 earth-friendly cars, I still kind of laugh at, whether it's a two-seat Tesla or,
right.
or a five-seat.
Hey, speaking of a two-seat Tesla, as I came out
Tesla.
Of LA...
It's not Z, it's an S.
Is that right? Okay.
G.
Anyway, I'm pulling out of LAX, and there's a Tesla in front of me, and he goes down the highway at about 45 miles an hour, and I go, oh, range anxiety.
Somebody's low on charge.
Yeah. So...
I've done that in our Mini-E before.
You've done... Oh, you
I've,
have?
I've been in the Mini-E going, yee, I'll get in the slow lane and hope I still don't get run into from behind because the battery charge is dropping faster than I think I'm going to get to my house. So.
Yes? Mark Rechtin has a thought.
I am just baffled by how we're coming around to a new generation of electric vehicles and suddenly, whether it's the Nissan Leaf or the GM Volt. Or whatever the electric vehicle is, and 15 years ago, GM had the EV1, and it's
terrific little car.
And it got 100 miles on a charge if you were lucky.
It did not.
No, I got like 30.
The last one did when they had
with the nickel metal hydride battery.
But now they're talking about
lead acid. I got 50 on it.
They're talking the new range of all these electric vehicles, and they're putting the same numbers out there.
Yeah.
It'll
give
you 100 miles of range, just like they said on the EV1.
Except now they're more expensive.
They're more expensive, and they're heavier, and you have to get all this ridiculous claptrap put up in your garage to charge it. And it seems like suddenly there's all this guilty acceptance because what's his name wrote that, did the movie, how
Chris Payne.
Chris Payne killed the electric car, or no, GM killed the electric car, says
who
Chris
killed
Payne.
The electric
Chris celebrated the fact that GM killed the electric car.
And meanwhile, now we have all these electric cars again. They really don't have any real world gain over the first generation one, which kind of looked like it was done by Caltech students on prank night. And now you have ones that look a little bit more finished, but they don't get any better mileage.
See, Mark keeps reading my editorials and then stealing my stuff. Yeah, this is absolutely true.
Where can you read those?
Where have we come? Where have we come in 10 years? When 10 years ago we had a 100-mile range two-seater that cost $550 a month to lease from GM, and now we've got a 100-mile range two-seater that costs, with no cargo space, but that costs $850 a month to rent from Mini. So how is this technological fix that's going to make, got electric cars right around the corner, you know, but 10 years we haven't done anything.
No, learned colleagues, I must disagree. I just spent a day in a Tesla Roadster Sport.
See, you almost said it too.
Yeah, but you're messing with my mind, man.
In a 100,000 mile car, in a $100,000 car, right?
Is that in a 109,000. No, actually
let him finish the story. He's really good at telling stories.
Yeah, okay. I just want to make sure.
Once upon a time,
this is the $100,000 car, right?
Once upon a time. Well, the Leaf's going to be
27, 30, 32,
the,
something.
IMEV, however you say that, one. That's going to be a lot. That's going to be a reasonably priced car.
What do you mean? They're selling it in Japan right now for $48,000.
But that's then they give you the government gives you a bunch of money. Yeah, it is subsidized, but
and the dollars
are coming
down. You can't look at the fluctuations.
Right. Batteries are astronomically expensive. You can't get around that. But they can package them such that they're going to be inexpensive. The Leaf's going to be about. What is it, 30?
30.
Oh, 30.
Yeah. Not about 30.
30 for a small economy car? I got to buy three of them.
I don't believe that at all.
But the Tesla, you were talking about mileage. I can get 100 miles. I have gotten 100 miles. The first Tesla that I drove, when they were first given test drives of it, I spent an entire day on winding, twisting roads, just hammering it. I got 100 miles. I got all the way back to the shop, and there was no problem at all.
I'd rather spend 50 on a Lotus Elise and 50 on making my house run off of solar so that I never have to pay another electric
bill. Well, ultimately, if you're looking at the big picture...
And be kinder to the Earth, too, by the way.
If you're looking at the big picture, we should all go out and eliminate... How many? 6 billion people in the world? I mean, you just can't...
That's a lot of
methane. It's unsustainable.
Now he's quoting from his own editorials, at least.
No,
you're right.
I'm saying the Book of Armageddon. The problem is population control.
Right. Well, that's 2012.
So we're sitting here bickering about...
Hey, this is an auto show. We're not going to talk about population
But that's
control.
Really the big problem. I mean, if your car gets 38 miles per gallon or 39 miles per gallon, it doesn't matter. We're rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic. We're all going to HE double hockey sticks. And nobody wants to address
that.
So
we might as well have fun before we get there.
We're the last generation.
I'm back to my $50,000
lease. Generation is going to argue about being politically correct.
Well, if we are the last generation, let's just use it all up.
Exactly.
You know, because tomorrow the comet hits and who cares?
Right.
The comet's not going to hit, though. There's 6 billion now. There's going to be 12 billion in 2050. I mean, look at those numbers.
But the comets are breeding?
Yes.
Well, we'll sell a lot of cars.
Comets are people.
I still want to see a number on the carbon footprint of the average human over a lifetime, because that essentially gets to your thing. And then we can start figuring out, wait a second, the real way to save the Earth from global warming?
Stop exhaling. No,
stop creating people that exhale.
Are we going to return to an agrarian economy where we live in mud huts and eat dirt? No, we're not going to.
A bunch of people out there just said, yes!
It's not going to happen. I mean, you live in Beverly Hills and you feel really good about yourself because you have, you know, your bottle of Prozac comes in a recyclable hemp container or something. It doesn't make any difference. It's just, it's peanut.
Peanut!
What was the question?
I didn't have a question.
He just was going to let you ramble.
Yeah, it was a statement that you didn't understand, so you thought it was a question.
But it is. I think that the larger picture is so much larger than anything in any of these halls here that it's silly to even argue about it.
Yep. Well, you know, apropos of this whole EV discussion, I keep pointing out to people that here we are a decade after hybrids first hit. And now everybody's got a hybrid, but there's still 2.5% of the American market
and more hybrids are sold in America than the rest of the world combined times whatever.
And Carlos Ghosn says in 2010, there'll be it'd be 10% pure electrics?
Yeah, right.
2020,
he says 10% pure electrics globally.
But I'm saying, here, 2.5% are now hybrids after a decade. Half of all that market is one car, the Prius, and probably half those sales are out here on the West Coast. Yeah. So if that's where hybrids have gone, and they work, I mean, the Prius is a terrific
car.
It's
cars.
A good car. So, you know, where are EVs going to be a decade from now? Okay, a whole lot less than where hybrids are.
According to Carlos.
Now,
here's the thing. It depends on whether or not the engineers are really working on this stuff. If all these are sort of stair steps toward the breakthrough technology, I mean, if we don't try, it's never going to happen. So at some point, someone's going to come up with the silver bullet, the hydrogen-powered, rotary-driven fuel cell.
With an Atkinson cycle.
With a rotary Atkinson? Wow. Somebody work on that. And it will get 100 miles per gallon, and it will still do 0 to 60 in 5.5 seconds. It will happen. It just may not happen in our lifetimes, but it has to require the people to actually desire to make the change. And if all we want to do is create, you know, 2,000 horsepower vehicles and go really fast and gulp gas that makes all the Saudi oil sheiks do the peanut dance.
Hey, I didn't say that out loud, but that's all I want.
It's what I want.
No, I was talking to BMW, one of the BMW engineers last night, and he was talking about all the work they're doing on the internal combustion engine to, you know, eke out every ounce of fuel efficiency that they can get, whether it's the friction issue or the weight issue. And he says there's still, efficiency to be harvested out of that. And, of course, that's what I've been hearing and feeling for years. I remember the first Sentra CA, remember the Nissan Sentra CA that everyone thought stood for California because it was only sold here, stood for clean air because it was a zero emissions internal combustion. It was a PZEV internal combustion engine. And I remember as soon as I saw that, I like, well, that makes sense. And again, the idea that the internal combustion engine is this, you know, evil thing we must put a stake through as soon as possible, even though we can make them put no emissions out, it seems
the emissions equivalent to an electric
car. Yeah, it's as clean as an electric car, you know, overall. And some would argue cleaner, you know, the whole cradle to grave thing, because you're not having to drill for nickel metal or lithium or whatever to get it into the car in the first place.
Whatever happened to the radiator that made the air cleaner?
It didn't work.
Oh, well, it was cold fusion.
It was the fish carburetor.
Yeah.
I read about that in Automotive News.
The fish carburetor is buried right under us, right next to the red cars.
Yeah. Well, another point that nobody's making, since I'm the only one who's going to really tell the truth here.
You better make that point or it will be lost forever.
Nobody wants to be inconvenienced in the least. They don't want it. You can double the efficiency of any car in the world by putting another person in it. Nobody wants to do that. You can eliminate all emissions by staying home that weekend or telecommuting or something.
Bicycling.
Nobody wants to do it. I have ridden a bike, almost killed me, from my 22 miles to my office and back just to prove a point. I forgot what the point was, but I almost died several times.
I was going to say that you...
And a number of pigeons died while I was doing it. But nobody wants to do that at all. We all want to have everything. We want to have all of our cake with all the frosting on it and the layer of the strawberry stuff in between, and we don't want to give up anything.
It's called roulade.
Is that a Disney animated movie?
A character from a Disney animated movie. So what you're saying is Americans are extremely environmentally conscious people, as long as it doesn't cost them anything. By the way,
no,
I agree.
I don't think the average American, I don't think, is so concerned with that. They're more concerned about many other things. The ones who are very vocal and who make movies and who get on TV and do stuff, they demand that Detroit clean up. It's like, clean up your act, Detroit. You know, but I want to, you know, watch my 87,000 square inch big screen TV while eating bonbons in the back seat of my gargantuan
SUV.
They make
that proclamation from the ninth of their 9-bedroom house. Yes, that's right.
Exactly.
Actually, I'm going to steal someone's material. John Mandel of Honda, which, you know, got to give Honda their credit for working hard at making fuel economy vehicles a priority.
Like the peanut.
Like the peanut.
You had to go there.
I had to go there.
I had to go there.
Okay. He calls these people environmental convenientarians. They are environmental when it's convenient for them to be that way. And so if they can, they don't have to buy the green car if they shout loud enough about everybody else having to do it. Or they'll buy the car if it's not inconvenient, if they still can go fast and get decent gas mileage at the same time. It's great for them.
Michael Jackson, not the one who recently passed away, the pop star.
The marketing himself. Michael Jackson or the AutoNation Michael Jackson?
Michael Jackson. I saw him speak at a hybrid vehicle conference, and he threw out some very interesting stuff. He's the end user on this stuff. He's the guy who's actually selling the cars. He said like 73 or 78% of people, potential buyers, actual people who are going to buy a car, say they will consider a hybrid car. He says he sells something like 3% of them.
Yeah, 2.5%.
Yeah, well, I guess remember, people don't want to be inconvenient.
But remember who killed the electric car? What they have, they claim they had 5,000, 10,000 hand raisers when they were trying to bring out the EV1, and then they had like, you know, 200 people show up to actually sign up for a $550 monthly lease on a car that could go for 60 miles initially and then need 8 hours to charge. So some reason, but that was evil GM. They killed that electric car.
Right. Yes. Well, what they ignored too is that all major automakers had to come out with electric cars. Ford had an electric Ranger. Chrysler had an electric minivan.
California Air Resources Board
mandate.
Is Satan.
Yeah, it's Satan.
No, they're many just misunderstood and misguided.
No, they. 20 years ago, we were all here 20 years ago. Rap. Well, you were in Detroit. You were here. Where were you?
I was probably drag racing someone in my carbon footprint.
ARB made all these things saying you have to have a certain, if you want to sell cars in California, you have to sell, and then they had this gradiated thing that would go up, and you have to sell like 10%, 15% of every car you sell has to emit zero emissions. They said that. Now, and so all the car companies got together and they didn't get together, but they all said,
that would
yes,
be collusion.
Of course we'll do that. So they made all these show cars knowing that somehow they were never going to have to produce 15%. But that was 20 years ago. I think today they're more serious about it. I think today I think Nissan really does intend to build a lot of electric cars and things.
Well, they intend to build them, but will they sell that many? That's the real question.
And if you look at the conversion rate of the 5,000 EV1 hand raisers to 200 sales, if you look at standard marketing protocol, that's a raging success. And so
yeah, because usually you get 0.5% kind of response and things like that. I'm serious. 0.5%.
Yeah.
So what does that mean when all of a sudden everybody brings out electric vehicles saying, we're going to get that 3% of the market? With our 200,000 that we're going to build, we're going to get all 200,000 sales. That's not happening.
Because too many of the greenies believe the polls. And if you go out and ask the average American, do you think cars should get better fuel economy? Sure, I do. I do too.
Yeah, what's the first one who's going to say, no, I think they should get worse?
What's your favorite solution?
Would you like to have a car that gets 50 miles to the gallon? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. But am I going to walk in the showroom and lay down my money? No, I want the premium sound system.
All right.
Yeah.
It's the baby seal argument.
Yeah.
Tell us the baby seal argument.
Well, are you in favor of clubbing baby seals? Or are you against clubbing baby seals? So, you know, who's going to actively say...
Wait a second,
but
is this a trick question?
But those slippers are so comfortable.
And they taste so good.
Autoline Detroit does not condone...
We are circling the drain. Please send questions. Yes.
This does not reflect the attitude or the opinion of the... Oh, we've got questions. Time for rapid fire. Okay, enough of our yakking. Let's see what our viewers have to say. Oh my God, these are long ones. Ed Whitaker writes in to say, "What makes you guys think I am not the guy to run GM? After all, it's not much different from riding and roping."
It's not much different from riding and roping.
Okay, Jeff wrote in to say, what's the panel's opinion of the new manager of Buick GMC? I don't even know who this guy is.
No, I know.
Yeah.
I wrote
and where'd he come from?
He was here Susan, today. Yeah, right.
They introduced him.
Mike Richards? Does that sound right?
Yeah, it's a Seinfeld guy.
Richard?
Yeah. Kramer. It's Michael Richards.
Michael Richards. No, I think, I don't know. Geez, this looks really bad.
Do you think he's the right guy for the job
I
don't know.
You can't say that.
I don't know.
You can't say it's more deck chairs until you see the guy in action.
Okay. I apologize. Michael Richards, I apologize.
If that is your name.
It seems a little convenient.
Okay, Gene Halliday, colleague of yours, writes in to say,
colleague of all of ours, I should say, but same publication.
God bless Jean Halliday.
And you too, yeah, you're under the same umbrella
there.
She
has never misquoted me.
What's your reaction to the new Chrysler brand commercial breaking today? I don't know. I haven't seen it.
We've been working all day today,
yeah.
Gene.
We didn't get to watch television.
we didn't watch TV all day.
And it's from Lancia's Italian ad agency.
Anything is better than the Dodge commercial.
Okay, so. An Italian ad agency be contracted for work for an American car company bailed out by the American taxpayer? Hey, whatever it takes to get our money back. We don't care if they have to go to the Italians to get our money back.
The best ad agency should be utilized for the ad campaign.
Yeah, what we've seen out of Chrysler's American ad agencies has been...
painful.
Yeah.
Well, plus, they're essentially Italian-owned and controlled now, so why not use an Italian ad agency? It's not like...
No, you mean, why not to do that?
My name is...
I bite my thumb at you.
My name is Mark, and my brain is empty. You know, come on. Do better than that, guys.
Actually, I kind of like that ad.
Oh, man.
I'm telling you.
Really?
Because,
stop.
Yeah, because it's not like, you know, built Ford tough, you know,
but people
like
remember
a
that.
Rock.
People remember
well,
that.
Well, they remember that, but it's like,
my
you know.
My name is Ram.
I mean, who's narrating that, by the way? It sounds like
the
Dan
voice
Rather.
Isn't that good. The voice.
It sounds like it's this tired old man, you know, and I don't know why I'm hearing about, you know, My name is Bam Bam, and my girlfriend is Pebbles. It just doesn't work for me.
You guys, it amazes me you have time to watch TV. Because here at Auto Week, we work
here
hard
we
for
go.
You every day. That's AutoWeek.com, where you can get a subscription for $29.95.
Who's giving you $4 for that one?
I'm giving it to myself.
I didn't read the whole comment from Ed Whitaker. You know, why do you think I'm not the right guy? It's not much different from riding and roping. First of all, you need some really good horses. Then you need the right people who know how to train them and ride them. After that, you just need to know how to promote the whole dang deal. Dadgummit, it's easy, boys.
Can you use that language?
We'll be strong and proud to go in no time, like New Rope. Mark my words. And if I didn't know better, I would suspect that it's my jingle jangle buddy, Peter, who might have wrote and all that.
Roten?
Well,
I like that word.
Riding and roten.
Speaking in the vernacular.
No different than riding and roten.
Okay, Jim Haynes writes in to say, what is Jeep's idea behind its latest ad where you have no idea what the ad is selling until the Jeep is shown in the last couple of seconds before the ending?
They're still climbing out from the Ram ad campaign. Give them some time.
Just show the car.
I will say that the spokes model at the Jeep lower 40 was terrific.
Yes.
That's my thoughts.
You're sleeping on the couch, aren't you?
Dang, I wish we could bring up a picture of her right now.
Picture it in your mind.
Dave at Ward's Auto says, that must be Dave Smith.
This is a trick question, I know.
It could be.
Dave
Mercedes?
Smith?
Yeah.
That guy's an icon in our field.
Yes, he is.
Should we genuflect?
Yeah, Zoya. Well,
I'd rather do...
Oh, Dave Zoya. Oh, it's the other Dave.
Oh, okay. Don't have to genuflect.
Okay.
All right.
Not for another decade.
Sorry, Zoya.
Because Smith earned his stripes.
Smith earned his chops.
Yeah.
Literally, he was in the Marines.
Yes, he was.
God bless him.
God bless him all the way. And Dave Zoya in another decade or two
was he in the
met
Air Force
that same
or something?
Age. I don't know.
Anyway, he says
Mercedes announced plans to build the C-Class in the U.S. Does BMW need to bring more production to the S because of the strong euro?
Yes.
Probably.
Yes.
No.
No.
Are you for higher gas mileage?
Are you some
pollution?
Sort of communist, Rectum? Yeah, right. Is that what you're saying?
It is reckless to make decisions on foreign production based on currency swings, because the time it takes to bring all the tooling over here will be just long enough for the euro to switch the other way, and suddenly they'll be stuck with high manufacturing costs here.
Not if they build their plants in Mississippi.
6 years ago, the euro was at 80 cents to the dollar. Now it's at $1.50. 6 years from now, it could be back to 80 cents.
Then you send the production back to Germany.
You can't talk like that. We're in the BMW booth, and do you know what they've spent on the Spartanburg plant right now to make all the X production happening over there for reason?
You can ramp up all the existing production there is, but as far as...
starting from scratch.
Yeah.
You also save some kind of import tariff tax thing on something,
chicken
don't
tax?
You? Well, that's only on the trucks, but...
Yeah.
Now, there's no import tariff to speak of.
Honda and, what does it cost to run a ship across the Atlantic or the Pacific or something? I mean,
expanding the existing manufacturing footprint is smart. But in terms of starting from scratch, why do you think Toyota has delayed getting the Prius plant down south up and running. I mean, aside from the market being absolutely in the tank, it's also a frighteningly expensive venture to do. And until they can rationalize the market and the market share, it doesn't make sense for them to do that. They have plenty of plants back home, and I'm sure that the Mercedes and BMW unions are thrilled to hear that they might lose their jobs to Americans.
They may, but with the dollar where it is, I think we're going to see more foreign car production in America.
Don't buy a BMW built today, because some Hans on the assembly line is really upset because his job's in jeopardy.
No, his job's not in jeopardy. They cannot take existing production out of Germany, according to Metallbau AG, the union over there. But if you add 14 lines that weren't there to begin with, you can produce those in America or wherever you want.
Okay, speaking of German companies, Mudmonster37 wants to know why Audi decided to paint the e-tron that ugly, bright emergency orange. WTF, he says.
What does that stand for?
Well, it means something like...
Wild turtles fall?
That's funny.
Yeah.
Wow, that's funny. I like that.
That's good.
It's a show car. It's a concept car.
It's supposed to
get attention.
Right, they're thinking cover shots. I don't know why, since magazines don't really exist anymore. But...
What? Oh, I'll tell you that, Mark.
They're thinking, yeah, coverage and bright colors, as usual.
Okay, George from Brooklyn asks, what do you think of the new Fiesta?
Too many doors. Too many doors. It needs a three-door.
And no four-door.
But other than that, get past the doors.
It's a very strong vehicle. I mean, we don't have to, it doesn't matter. Sometimes, actually, it doesn't even matter what we think. The European market has spoken, and it's the second best-selling car in Europe right now behind the Golf. So I'm assuming it's going to do relatively well here. It doesn't have to do nearly as well as it's doing in Europe to be a huge success here. If it's the fourth best-selling car in that segment, it'll be huge. So.
But once again, that segment is vastly over-promoted because it's all about fuel economy. But if you look at the number of cars, if you add up all the Fits and Yaris's and Versas, it's a drop in the bucket compared to all the enormo SUVs out there. And it'd be great if Americans could embrace the small car and embrace the commuter car, but like we were talking about, it's not convenient. They get a bumpy ride, there's too much road noise.
And gas is only $2.50 a gallon. Right. Well, not out here. It's $3 here in L.A., but in the rest of the country, gas is cheap.
Yeah.
Small cars can be great.
But car companies are looking at small cars. Not looking, they're planning toward making more and more small cars available.
Well, and I still wonder how much of that is, the frightening, EPA requirements that we're going to see in the next 8 years. I mean, they have to be prepared for that. Even if the U.S. market isn't yet. And maybe the U.S. market will someday be.
Here's a comment from MedTech. Have they been drinking, LOL? No, we haven't been drinking.
LOL.
That's a problem.
That's the scary thing, is that we have not been drinking.
Yeah, that's H2O. Okay, Kevin says, with the announcement...
You should have seen us in the 70s.
With the announcement today, Mitsubishi and Peugeot... What do you mean, today? We've been reporting this on Autoline Daily months ago. Mitsubishi and Peugeot are forming a strategic partnership that'll be... The return of Peugeot to the American market. Oh, no. Will this be the return of Peugeot to the American market and help save Mitsubishi here?
No. Mitsubishi is desperate for a dance partner. They've been for a while. So this is Mitsubishi grasping at the life preserver that was finally thrown to them by somebody else.
And actually, the details, I believe, of the story is... Peugeot PSA, Peugeot and Citroën have gone to Mitsubishi and said, hey, we need electric car too. Why don't you loan us the IMEV, or however you pronounce it. Yeah.
And nobody Mitsubishi knows. Says, we will if you buy our godforsaken plant in Illinois. Because nobody wants it.
But actually, Kevin brings up a good point. Peugeot would love to get back in the American market.
Not with a euro at $1.50.
That's true.
Not with that product lineup.
Yeah, nobody can.
Yeah, we can't afford small, cheap cars that are real expensive.
We can afford expensive European cars. A French Honda Civic for $33,000, yeah, no.
Remember, GM had to have its arm twisted to keep the Cruze production in this country, so...
Okay, Jay Cujo wants to know, it sounded bad, it looked bad, and felt bad. How overshadowing was Fritz resigning for any of the GM debuts?
I thought he was talking about the show.
Smelled bad.
Yeah.
So what was the question?
Well, the question was, did Fritz resigning overshadow the GM debuts?
It makes me wonder about Whitaker. Is he the great Satan? And he hasn't had his press conference yet, so we don't know. All we can do is speculate because he hasn't come out and said.
Fritz didn't resign.
Yeah, he didn't resign.
He was resigned.
Well, if you believe Fritz's daughter.
That was great. The percentage of F-bombs was 11% of that, somebody said.
If anybody didn't see that.
Higher than the hybrid market.
Somebody posted on the GM blog a vitriolic message of F this and F that, claimed that she was Fritz's daughter. And, you know, I believe it was her because it just rang true.
Have you met her?
No, I never have.
I dated her in high school. No, I'm kidding.
Now Fritz has to have you killed, too.
Right.
Everybody's going to kill us.
But you know what? My reaction was, you go, girl. You're standing up for your dad.
That's not the way to do it.
What's not the way to do it?
It's very entertaining for us.
Right.
But it's perhaps not the best way to make it.
Somebody's not getting a Corvette for Christmas, and she's upset.
Let's see. Sam here has got a long one. He says, don't think I ever read a review.
Sam here has got a long one. It's the internet. We can get away with this, yes.
Don't think I've ever read a review of the Honda CR-V that didn't comment on the four-cylinder lacking power while the RAV4 and others have six cylinders. With all the other major manufacturers now promoting 30-plus miles per gallon on the new CUVs with their four cylinders and talk of turbos coming later, are we backing up to Honda's original idea, and is four-cylinder a good thing? And they all still have the same power. I don't know. This is too long and too hard for me to write. But I think what he's getting at is, isn't four-cylinder the way to go?
Well, what you read is that everyone, all of the guys who work at these silly, you know, automotive publications, whine about the power in the four-cylinder CR-V and or the RAV4. Then you go look at the sales charts, as we were talking about earlier, and you see which versions of those cars sell the most and why Hyundai isn't even bothering with a six-cylinder in the new Sonata. So bottom line is that four-cylinder serves the purpose of most of the audience for most of these vehicles. And so, yes, we're finally getting to the point where manufacturers, especially with the EPA requirements of the next 10 years, are basically acknowledging, I guess we're just going to have to make smaller engines that are more fuel efficient. And the market's going to have to, the small sliver of the market that cares about the six-cylinder power, going to have to deal with it.
Well, and you're smarter.
So you, Mark. No, you, Mark. No, you, Mark.
After you.
Well, okay, I just want to say that the horsepower claims of four cylinders, when they say they got all this horsepower, it's often at like 85,000 RPM where they get it. So most of the time you're driving out of town, it doesn't feel like there's that much horsepower. So, yes, you have to give it up regardless. Now, Mark Reckton will take the floor.
The thing about four cylinders is that everybody is in fear of the 2015 CAFE standards. And because engines have such a long life cycle, if you were to put a brand new engine family in, say, the new Sonata or the new CR-V, that engine's going to have to make it work for 10 years. Well, then you're already blowing past the 2015 CAFE requirements, and you find yourself in a bit of a quandary.
Yes, you do.
Absolutely.
And that's why you said it. Everybody's worried about it.
That's why the peanut is the future.
Okay, Bad Nickel says, what is the group thinking of Detroit putting demands on GM to keep its headquarters in town? You guys don't even know this story, do you? LA doesn't even know that's going on.
Yeah, they're
Detroit.
Just...
What is this Detroit you speak of?
It is a French outpost where they trade furs.
Ah, Detroit! Mais oui, bien sûr! Zut à gauche!
That Detroit. Sacre we know bleu. That.
Right. Go back to the peanut dance.
We've got a question. They want to know about Volvo and Saab. What do you guys think? Volvo and Saab.
Okay, with the chip off camera here is saying, what about Volvo and Saab?
What about Volvo?
What about
Saab?
Volvo? Well, Volvo's okay, right? I mean, the Geely is in line to borrow $1.8 billion to pay Ford to buy it, and it looks like it's a done deal. They worked out all the intellectual property.
I thought I've seen a few other done deals in the last 6 months that actually
good point.
Done.
Yeah, Saturn and Saab.
And the deal with Saturn shows that GM seems to lack any sort of, close feeling towards the brand. And if GM created Saturn and was willing to kill it, if it says, if we don't find a buyer for Saab by December 31st, they're gonna personally walk over to Trollhättan and put a fork in it. Spiker says they've got a bunch of Russian money and that they're willing to buy it. And I think it'd be really actually pretty cool to have a Dutch company run a Swedish company.
Using Russian money?
Yeah, using Russian money. I mean,
a Dutch company that just moved all its production out of the Netherlands
to
into the UK.
England.
Yes.
It's very global.
Totally global.
So je ne sais quoi.
Okay. No, no.
No. The 9.5 is here, too. The 9.5 we saw at Frankfurt, but it is also here. And I've heard a lot from my learned colleagues that they like it. It's all done. The work's done. It's done to the point where they've written the ad campaigns and the marketing. It's ready to go. It's shovel-ready or whatever
you say. I mean, you know, face it.
But if they did survive, they have at least a new car.
But look, General Motors bought this thing. They threw everything at it. They dumped a ton of money into that thing.
It was General Motors money being dumped in a General Motors way, and it's the same thing that led to, you know, all the other problems that we're seeing over the last year that they've
Even when it was just Saab and the Swedes ran it, I mean, they couldn't even fill up one assembly plant. You can't run a whole car company on one assembly plant unless you're charging Ferrari prices.
Well, if all you're selling to is Sweden.
Even then, you can't do it. Not in today's world, I don't think.
Yeah, but they talk about how, the key is in the floor. It has so much character. It doesn't have that much character. The old ones, those old three-stroke, three in the tree.
The 92.
Cool. Those were really
cool. And the Sonnet.
The Sonnet.
Sonnet. Who the hell would own a Sonnet?
But they were. They
I didn't,
character.
Thank God, after that.
No, they did have character. I did, actually, now, for several years.
You did?
Yeah, I had a Sonnet.
He's done everything. It's amazing.
That was back when Saabs were quirky, and then GM decided quirky is silly and it's limiting our market share. We're going to make the cars more mainstream, and that worked out real well.
No, they just wanted to sell more Opel chassis, so they
right.
You mentioned well
this comes from Jeremy Jones from Dallas. You mentioned
that's
smart.
Not a real name.
January Jones?
Jeremy.
Oh.
Let's call him. We'll refer to him as January.
We have
January.
Hollywood. January Jones.
Okay, you mentioned smart. What about the proposed Scion IQ? How do you think the market will take it?
It's
only
cool.
When it's an Aston Martin grill on front. That is the ultimate Toyota IQ.
That is the dumbest thing.
The Aston Martin one.
The Aston IQ. Martin Signet.
What about Rolls-Royce doing a version
somebody
of the Mini?
Somebody paid somebody off to do that.
That's a big hoax.
That's
it,
awful.
It is.
But the IQ itself is cool. And it is.
It's a cool looking car.
I myself love these little. When we go to Japan, we see all these little K-class cars. K-E-I. And they are so cool, and I wish we could get them here. They're death traps, which is
that's why we can't
hamper their saleability
right.
here.
Yeah, but that slows things down.
Yeah, but they're really cool, and I think the IQ is one of the coolest.
And if Scion sells it, we'll see if the kids are willing to put their money where their mouth is when they say, "Oh, we want to save the world," or if they just want to stick blowers on everything.
Kids don't want to save the world.
Now, the kids don't even want to pretend. You know, it's the old people who want to pretend they want to save the world from their 9-bedroom house. The kids don't even want to pretend they're going to save the world.
Bedroom.
Well, hey, it's the top of the hour, so we've fulfilled our
what?
Hour.
An hour
allotment.
Has gone by.
Our contractual obligation is complete.
Is complete. That's
how much
exactly
are we
right.
getting for this?
Oh, you're getting a bottle
$4.
Of water, man. Jeez, some people in the world are dying for it, and you're bitching about getting a bottle of
you
water.
You can't say that word.
Only as an adjective, not as a verb.
That's right.
So this is 0.5 liters divided by 60 minutes. It's dripping out.
You've been sweating more water than you just got paid.
But it's worth it to be on AutoLine Detroit.
After Hours.
That's right.
Sorry.
With
After
John
Hours.
McElroy.
Yeah, remember which show that
let's,
you're
let's,
on.
Let's give a round of applause for our
round of applause to our gracious host.
McElroy. And all you online, we can hear you.
Golf clap.
Mark Vaughn, AutoWeek. Carl Brower, Edmunds. Mark Recton, Automotive News. Great having you guys here. Really appreciate it.
Thanks
truly
for
do.
The water.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a memory for the peanut dance one more time.
Yeah. Peanut dance. Peanut dance.
Okay. Everybody up.
Peanut.
Jeez. Now our career is
we're
going to
be in an
officially.
Ad. Okay, is it off? Are we off? Good. That should hold a little.
Visit our website, AutoLineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern, get your daily automotive news fix with AutoLine Daily, and in-depth analysis and interviews with AutoLine Detroit. That's all there, and much more, at AutoLineDetroit.tv.